I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me to come downstairs and give this talk. I would also like to thank Joe and Walter for basically providing a wonderful introduction to my talk. You know, you usually think if you only have 25 minutes to talk, then you have to shorten things up. But since they basically did my introduction for me, plus a lot more, I'm in pretty good shape. So, like Catherine said, I'm going to talk about higher order corrections to the KDV approximation to water waves. This is joint work with all the people whose names you've seen before, but also I wanted to especially single out Gene Wayne, who was my advisor at the time that I was doing this work. So anyway, thanks, Gene. So we're still talking about collisions, so I'm going to talk mostly about collisions. And I'm going to talk about head-on collisions, aka counterpropagating collisions, that we've learned a lot about. I'm just going to remind us of what the situation. We're still talking about water waves. So the salient points are when they happen fast, right? I mean, they don't take a very long time, 5 seconds. Let's see, what's another important thing? One is this issue of the maximum run-up thing. Okay, so a head-on collision of solid waves looks sort of almost linear, right? I mean, there is some sort of superposition going on. There's a sort of issue with maximum run-up. In other words, 1 plus 1.25 is over 2.25, like we saw in the last couple slides. Okay? There's also sort of this phase shift issue, which is sort of interesting in its own right. Walter gave a sort of good heuristic why these latter two points are maybe connected, so I won't talk too much about that. And I'm not going to talk as much about this, maybe there's some dispersion. In other words, maybe there's a little dispersive wave that forms behind the waves as they move along. There's also overtaking waves, aka following waves, aka co-propagating waves. So since it's the third talk, I thought I would introduce a third notation for it. So these I'm not going to talk as much about. They happen slowly, right? They sort of take a long time to occur. They're sort of decidedly nonlinear, right? I mean, you looked at those pictures that we just saw, and there's nothing even closely approximating linear superposition in this sort of instance. And so you don't really have anything linear to go with. Well, maybe you do, but... and, of course, there's also this phase shift issue, which is sort of connected to all this stuff. So these are sort of the salient points of these collisions. And I'm going to talk mostly about the head-on collisions because, sort of as we've learned, they're a little bit easier to deal with because they're fast, primarily, and because they're maybe closer to linear. All right, so here's my water wave. So for me, the tank is always one unit deep. For me, gravity always is one unit directly down. And I'm going to call the free surface eta, and this coordinate is going to be x. So eta of x and t means the free surface of the water. Okay. What I'm not going to do is write down the Euler equations for the problem, although Walter did write them down already, so it's the same ones that we saw previously. So I'm going to first tell you what the KDV model says. Okay. So it's sort of been implicit in the last couple talks what the KDV model says, but since I'm going to talk about correcting it, I better tell you what it does a little more explicitly. So the KDV model says, so here's a theorem. This is due to Guido Schneider and Gene Wayne. My version of it, the version I'm telling you is, other people have proven very similar theorems from 2000. Other people include Walter Craig. There's some recent work by Jerry Bona and some collaborators that is similar as well. So that's the credit where credit is due part. But more or less, this is what these theorems sort of basically say. It says eta of x and t is equal to epsilon squared. So epsilon, I'm thinking of waves as being roughly a wavelength of 1 over epsilon. Epsilon is some small number. and a height epsilon squared. This is the same scaling that is very common. This is the long wave scaling that we've been talking about. So it's epsilon squared u, I'll tell you what this is in a second, okay. So the theorem is, there's a lot of hypotheses and stuff that I'm sweeping underneath the rug here, but the fact is the free surface evolves like epsilon squared times some function u, which is in a long wavelength and moving reference frame, and it's moving to the right with a slow time dependence, plus v times a similar thing but moving to the left, plus an error of order epsilon to the fifth, which is a half power of epsilon better than the amplitude. U and v unsurprisingly solve KdV equations. So let me write down what those are. Minus 2 dtu equals 1/3 dx cubed u plus 3/2 dx u squared 2 dt v equals 1. Okay, so capital T for the remainder of the talk is going to be epsilon cubed times small t. Capital X will either be epsilon times x minus t or epsilon times x plus t. It's my long wavelength parameter, I mean variable. Okay, so these are my KdV equations, and this is what the theorem says. So in other words, so the free surface really does evolve according to something like the KdV equations. This 5/2 here is sort of non-optimal. If you do it formally, you should get a 4 there, or really, since this is this big O is an L2, it should be 7/2. This is their result. We've been able to improve it to the 7/2, so that's just, I just wanted to be truthful. So it's really as accurate as it ought to be. Okay, so what does this tell us, okay? Well, first of all, notice that these equations are completely uncoupled, all right? So first of all, I have a solitary wave solution to this guy, to each of these guys, right? So I'll write it down. Here's a solitary wave to KdV. Looks exactly like this. You've actually seen this before already. Gamma 1 squared, sec squared, square root of 3/4 of gamma 1 times x minus gamma 1 squared t. And then this one has a solitary wave, gamma 2 squared, sec squared, square root of 3/4 gamma 2 x minus gamma 2 squared, capital T. Okay, so these are just solutions to KdV. They have nothing to do with the water waves. These are just the standard ones that you can solve by writing down, you know, the correct ODE and solving it. All right, so but what this says, and I want to make an extra comment here, this is for T less than epsilon to the minus 3. Okay, so that was a crucial point that I forgot. The point is that this approximation is good for a long time. All right. In particular, t less than order epsilon to the minus 3 is order 1 on the KdV time dynamic, so you're going to see interesting behavior. Okay. So what this predicts, though, about collisions, okay, is to this order, I'm going to see a collision of two solitary waves going in opposite directions, and the collision is going to be completely linear. Right? This is Joe's... was it the dashed line on Joe's pictures? Okay. Yep. Yeah, that's the L2. That's an L2 big O. That's an L2 big O. That's right. Yeah. And that's why there's this half power missing from this epsilon scaling here. All right. In L infinity, that's an 8. That's a 8/2, which is also called 4. So, okay. Okay, so KdV predicts a linear head-on collision. Okay, and one thing I want to point out is that it's a linear head-on collision of you can, by choosing gamma 1 and gamma 2 differently, you can tune the heights, right? You can make these guys collide at different heights, which is good. Okay, so probably many of you have seen this derived before, but I mean, roughly you just take, to derive this roughly, you just take this part, you jam it into the equation in some way that is probably not particularly mathematical, and out pops these KdV equations. I might talk a little more about this at the end. Another thing to notice is that if I set V equal to 0 and I take U to be one of these famous, say, 2 or 3 or 4 soliton solutions to KdV, then I get an overtaking wave solution to water waves. Those things occur on this time scale, so we ought to observe it. In fact, as we saw in the last talk, they are in fact observed. Okay. But we already saw that, you know, it's not linear. So what we wanted to do was we wanted to fix up KdV to account for these things that we're seeing that are sort of coming from you know, nonlinearity in the problem. So, but we didn't want to get rid of KdV. KdV is like sort of too good to be true, right? I mean, it's pretty easy to write down. It's completely integrable. You can model it numerically with relative ease. I mean, anything you want from KdV, you got, except that it's not the water wave equation. So our goal was to come up with some way to add something onto the KdV approximation and make things better, all right? And also at the same time, keep things simple, right? Because it's easy to write down a model equation that's hard, and our goal was to write down a model equation that was easy. So, I don't know, easy stuff's nice, I guess. Okay, so how did we do it? Here's our fix. We said, let's take eta of x and t to be epsilon squared u plus v. I'm just going to suppress the dependencies, but they're the same as they are over there. And then I'm just going to add some more junk that's at the next order of magnitude, okay, in my asymptotic expansion. And I'm going to find out, I'm going to think hard about what's going to go in these parentheses, and then I'm going to figure out what equations that solves, and then I'm going to hope that I can put a plus O to the epsilon, well, what's 7 plus 4? 11. Here. Okay? So that's what we're hoping for. So what do you put in here? Okay. Well, I erased this one board, but let's see. One thing I want to take care of in particular are these head-on collisions. Okay? This is something that's not got an intrinsic reference frame. All right? This is something that's a coupling between right and left moving wave packets. And so I'm going to put a P here, and it's going to correct for these interactions. It's going to be long wavelength, okay? So I'm going to put an epsilon there because everything's long wavelength. But I'm not going to put it in a moving reference frame, so I'm just going to leave it at that. Okay, epsilon x. And then how is it going to depend on time? Well, it's a sort of fast interaction. Right, so I'm just going to put epsilon t there. So notice that this is slow, and so this is fast. Epsilon t is fast. All right. Okay, so that's sort of taking into account these interactions between left and right moving things. Then I also want to consider what's going to happen sort of for these unidirectional problems, okay? I mean, the KdV, even in the case of unidirectional stuff, isn't perfectly solving the water waves equation, and so I should try to correct for that too. And so I'm going to add two other functions, f and g, which have the exact same functional form as u and v. Okay? And so that's just there to take into account sort of the co-propagating collision errors and also sort of dispersive wave stuff. And then, as it turns out, there's an additional function here that I'm just going to call delta, but delta is just made up of u and v. Well, and its derivative. So it's just a function. I can write it down for you. It's basically the second derivative of u plus the second derivative of v plus some other stuff. And this is just, it comes out in the wash. Okay, so don't worry too much about that. So if you fight through pages of formal calculations, you find that P, F, and G satisfy the following equations. So I'm going to call epsilon T tau, okay? So that's my fast time variable. D tau squared P minus D B squared P is 3 D, D X squared U times V, where once again I'm suppressing the the functional dependencies of these guys, just because it's beta's X, capital X. Capital X, remember, is my long wavelength coming. So sometimes I call it beta, but really I meant X. There's some other changes of variables in this that I'm ignoring. So that's, okay, this is an easy equation to solve, all right? This is the easiest equation to solve that you'll probably ever see in an actual PDE conference, right? This is just a wave equation with an homogeneous term. So that's great. So this one makes me smile, because like I said, I was looking for easy equations. Now, sort of also maybe unsurprisingly, F and G are going to satisfy linearized KDB problems. So maybe that should be unsurprising. So in particular, they're linearized around the KDB solutions. There's also these inhomogeneous terms, which I'll call J minus, and 2 dtg equals 1/3 dx cubed g plus 3 dx v g plus j plus. J minus and j plus are like delta. They're just made out of u and v and also p to a smaller extent. Okay, so these are known. They're kind of long, but who cares? I'm not going to tell you what they are. All right. Now these are linearized KDV equations, so maybe they don't make me smile as much, but maybe they don't make me sad either, so maybe I'm like that. Then I read this paper by Bob Sachs, which says, I think it's from 1980, where he says you can solve this explicitly by methods associated to inverse scattering. And so for a second, I'm like this, because I'm thinking, oh, that's great, because this is explicitly solvable. But then I look at the method, and then I'm back to this. Okay? So that's no comment on the quality of the work, but just rather how easy it is to, you know, implement. Okay, so the good news is at the end of the day, if you do this, you can prove this theorem that I wanted to prove with the epsilon to the 11 halves up there for the same time scales. Okay, so that's the good news. Let's see. The other good news, okay, here's the other good news. In the process of doing this, we get the following estimate. Okay? It says that if the initial condition for F and G are zero to begin with, then I have this. F of dot epsilon cubed T in L2 is less than a constant times the square root of, let's do it like this, epsilon to the 3/2 square root of T times E to the epsilon cubed T. Okay? So if I stare at this for a second and I think about something, okay, what time scale does the head-on collision take place on? Okay? Well, I'm going to tell you that the head-on collision occurs when T is roughly 1 over epsilon. Right? These waves move with more or less unit velocity towards each other. Their spatial extent is 1 over epsilon, so T is roughly 1 over epsilon. So if I chase that through here, then I find that F is roughly, what does this wind up being? A power, this is one over epsilon, so this is like epsilon, okay? So in other words, I can put my hand over the F and G, and, well, it's still an order power of epsilon higher. So in other words, so for a head-on collision, my theorem says something like this, that eta is equal to epsilon squared U plus V, the KDV part, plus epsilon to the 4th, P plus delta plus order epsilon to the 5th. Okay? So that's still better than the order that I'm approximating at. This is still better than KDV by itself. And in particular, the reason this is so great is because while these are sort of complicated to solve, this is easy to solve. Moreover, if I take as initial conditions, if I take U and V to be these guys, okay, then the solution to this and the solution, the whatever delta is, are also computable in terms of setches and tangents. Now, it's like a page and a half long, but you can do it, and I did it. So the point is now I have an explicit approximation for head-on collisions of water waves of sort of arbitrary, amplitudes. Well, not arbitrary, but small, but arbitrary with respect to one another, amplitude, that I can just write down. Okay? So there's two here. They're uncoupled, though. But I'm taking into account the coupling here. Like I'm being a little bit on the sly. I'm including the coupling as a linear, as a solution to a linear problem, right? Yep. So before I show you these pictures, I want to say that these linearized KdV equations and sort of higher order corrections to KdV, that's by no means unique to us. Bob Sachs in particular was studying linearized KdV as an approximation for water waves. Other people to do so include Kodama and Taniuti. Sadger, Haragusa, and Nichols did it for an Euler-Poisson equation. And in Drazen's book about solitons, he even talks about this. So this is not unique. These guys aren't unique. This particular combination is sort of novel. So, and the other best thing is that we have a theorem, right? This is actually a theorem. It's not just it's not just formal analysis. So now I'm going to show you how we do. So I'm going to show you pictures that have a lot of the same information that you've already seen from Joe's talk, but it's going to have this approximation added onto it, and Philippe's Euler code removed from it, only because it would be a little bit busy. Okay, so let's get this guy down here. Okay, so this is these circles are the same circles that you saw in Joe's talk. And what's what? So KdV alone is going to be a dashed line, which you can't see very well because everything's like right on top of it. But here's the dashed line. Okay? The circles are the experimental data, and the solid line is sort of our U plus V plus P plus delta. Okay? So this is the initial condition. One thing that you'll notice over here, you can see fairly clearly, is that the KdV solitons is narrower than the data is. That's because of the difference between the so-called Tanaka wave and the KdV wave. We've taken that into account into solving these equations, thanks to some higher-order corrections to the solitary wave, thanks to Grimshaw. But I'm just saying those names so that I'm giving credit where credit is due. Okay, so that's the initial condition. This is a couple seconds later on the way towards the collision. Okay, everything's on top of each other there. You can sort of see that here in the middle, the dip, KdV, is a little bit below the data, and we're a little bit closer into it. So not very exciting yet. Maybe that's the same picture. All right. Now this one you might recognize. So now we're getting closer to the maximum run-up. So what are we seeing here? The experimental data still has this problem that Joe described from the resolution in time, but it's already beginning to overshoot the pure linear superposition of KdV stuff, and we seem to be, at least on the left-hand side, doing better. Okay, what happens next? How convincing am I? Okay, maybe that's a little bit better. And this is a time period close to the maximum run-up. KdV is way down here, and we're getting, well, depending on which side of the data you believe, We're going to go with the right side on this picture and then the left side on the last one. But okay, but the point is that we seem to be, we're not out of the ballpark, and for something constructed out of fetches and tangents, we seem to be doing pretty well. The next picture, I'm going to be depressed again. So this is after the collision, and this is the sticking of the solitary waves together at the time of collision. You can sort of see that the KdV is down here. The data is still stuck together, and we're somewhere in between. So it doesn't look so great, but it doesn't look so bad. At least we're in between, right? And then a little bit later, okay, we're doing better again. And then a long time after the collision, we're right on. Okay? So that's the general outline of what we've done. And I don't know. I feel pretty confident that that's pretty good for something that you can compute explicitly. How much time have I got? 1 minute. Okay. So, well, I'll just tell you that. Mostly that's what I wanted to show you. I don't have any pictures for the solitary, the co-propagating waves yet. I suspect that might be a problem at these high amplitudes. This is a fundamentally low amplitude sort of approximation, and these are already sort of medium height. So I'm not so sure that we're going to be able to do as good job with the co-propagating sort of situation, but I'm still going to try it. And anyway, there you go. Thank you for your time.